The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Two wildly different reads on the consumer. Shares of Williams-Sonoma surging while Dollar Tree dives. What do these two retailers say about the strength of spending? We'll debate that. Plus, TikTok, TikTok. The House passing a bill that looks to crack down on the viral video app. Could its days in the States really be numbered? And what could it mean for the rest of the social media space? We'll debate that. And homing in on housing, shares of Lennar on the move after reporting results as affordability and housing supply weigh on this space. We'll talk exclusively with the Home Builders Executive Chairman, Stuart Miller, about his outlook in just a few minutes. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour, Steve Grasso, Guy Dami, and Lori Calvacina, head of U.S. Equity Strategy at RBC Capital Markets. Welcome, Lori. We start off with two very different reads on two very different consumers. Shares of Dollar Tree plunging more than 14% after posting misses on the top and the bottom lines this morning. Shares, which had been on a steady climb since October, seeing their biggest drop in nearly 2 years and erasing all the gains for 2023. Meantime, Williams-Sonoma stock cooking up an all-time high today. The high-end home goods retailer beating earnings estimates, upping its stock buyback plans by $1 billion and hiking its dividend by 26%. And get this, in the last 6 months, Williams-Sonoma posted virtually the same gains as red-hot NVIDIA. So does today's action emphasize just how divergent the high-end and the low-end consumers are? This is a theme certainly that we've been hitting on for months and months and months, but this really seems to underscore that.
It's one thing for us to say. It's another thing to see two stocks on the same day perform the way they did. Williams-Sonoma, all-time high. Tim has discussed WSM for quite some time now, and he's been right. This move, though, lately is a bit parabolic, but the Dollar Tree is the one that I'm focused on. I'm a little concerned about, because if you think about it, I think it was over a year or so ago, back when Dollar Gen said people were trading down from our stores to like food banks, right? Food kitchens. And that was disturbing in a word. So when people used to go down to the Dollar Tree to save money, now they're trading down from a place like that. That flies in the face of what we're seeing on the other end of the spectrum, the high end. So the wealth gap continues. I think unemployment is going to be a problem. I think inflation is clearly a problem, is manifesting itself in some of these numbers. And that's one of the reasons I'm still not particularly optimistic about the broader market.
Actually, in the conference call, they also spoke about trading down from the higher income consumers. They said 3.4 million new customers were added in 2023, and most of them were higher income households, greater than 125,000. So we're seeing sort of that same dynamic that Walmart had seen a couple quarters ago in terms of that high-end trade down, Lori.
Now, look, I think this is a theme we've been reading about as well, not just for the last, you know, couple months, but the last couple quarters, and it's really just not budging. You know, the thing we've been talking about a bit, our economics team has been talking about how the consumer generally is less sensitive to short-term rates. Well, that's certainly not true for the lower-end consumer, and so it's not surprising to me that we're sitting here at these elevated levels. You're starting to feel the pinch, and you're seeing more pain there.
It's interesting. So, right, Williams-Sonoma, whether it's the Dutch oven that's been selling off the hook,
or the Riedel stemware.
Or the Riedel stemware, which you can get there, and we have the inside track on that. I just think if you listen to that Dollar Tree number, it was all about the guide. It was all about a number of factors that I think actually don't have me that concerned. I mean, they're talking about an early Easter. They're talking about weather. They're talking about dynamics, I think, in terms of some of the seasonals, some of the elements, I think, of a cautious guide that the market just beat up and said their consumers running out. I think the profitability here is a big issue. You've seen a lot of companies come through with margin enhancement, and actually it's been, if anything, about profit margins that have increased across the board, especially in retail, and you're not getting that here. So I think some of the macro is to be concerned about, but I think this is kind of an overreaction for a stock that was climbing out of a hole.
I agree with that. I think if you look at it, wasn't this more about Family Dollar, that acquisition, going back and optimizing, how do they phrase it, portfolio optimization?
Closing stores.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's a fancy way of saying it. But if you look at Dollar Gen, they don't have that same issue that Dollar Tree did. And Williams-Sonoma looks like a turnaround story that has started to turn around to me. So I don't know if we're making it bigger than it is. I think we might be guilty of that a little bit. I would like to see I agree with Tim. Overdone. Look at the spike down.
Is it a buy?
This is a 3-day rule, definitively 3-day rule. Let it breathe, but maybe go the other way and go Dollar Gen.
So
we're going to hear from Dollar Gen tomorrow morning, by the way.
Yes. So we'll be able to compare and contrast.
Sounds like a would you rather?
No, I'm sorry.
So sensitive with the would you rather.
That's where you were going.
Well, I don't like it when other people insert the would you rather.
I was sensitive.
I was going to say, these
little distance
guys,
between
sticking
the two
my nose
of you.
In there
these
on the would you rather where they
sound
don't
like they are sort of constructed. Like maybe we overreacted to these results, Guy, and you're actually concerned. So where do you think at the.
So maybe we're having two different conversations. Well, we're having multiple conversations.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's an overreaction in the stock. Maybe. I don't think there's an overreaction in terms of the commentary and what it says about where we are as an economy, where one side of the equation is doing extraordinarily well. And you see it manifesting itself in these high end retailers, not just Williams-Sonoma's, a bunch of others that we talk about. And the flip side of the coin is people are clearly hurting. And I think at some point, and if you think about this, I believe that people are fighting the combating inflation with credit. That doesn't end well. And it's in the numbers. I mean, credit card debt in this country is now north of $1.15 trillion at an average rate, I think, around 24%. That's not going to end well either. So when you start hearing things like this and drawing these comparisons, I don't think it's particularly bullish.
I'm not discounting the plight that everyone's going through right now. But if you look at a Walmart, that would be considered not high end. Right. And Walmart's been pretty successful. So I think it's more a Dollar Tree story.
It's an execution issue.
Exactly.
In your view.
So I would just throw one more thing in the mix on the broader market, which is that if we are seeing, you know, clear and present evidence that lower end consumers are really struggling and maybe that stepped up a bit, that is something that keeps the Fed in play, which I think is ultimately good for the market. I've had a lot of conversations with people saying, oh, my gosh, the economy is so strong, the Fed can't possibly cut. Well, maybe just more evidence that things are not so rosy if you dig down to all the layers is something that can keep them moving.
To you, though, as a strategist who has a broader view, do you take a look at this data point and think this is a data point that will keep the Fed in play?
I think it is. I mean, and you know, what I've sensed is talking to investors. So there's this March view, right? And that got kind of pushed back to June, but our house was already in June. And so I got a lot of pushback from people when the economic data was flying. Well, they're not going to cut at all. And I said, well, you know, they are going to cut because they're trying to prevent a recession. And they weren't necessarily looking for all this enormous, you know, damage to the economy. But there's a contingent of people who thinks that you do need to see some damage. So I think that data point helps convince a lot of participants in the market that the Fed will move.
I have no problem there being two consumers out there, and I think you can invest around it. I still think that the Williams-Sonoma story, first of all, it's not terribly cheap. I actually bought some Restoration Hardware because I think, talk about execution, this is a name that I think they were running into themselves. But what they both would have said, but we did hear from Williams-Sonoma, is that this has been one of the most difficult housing markets in decades. And that's a pretty extraordinary statement. It's part of the reason why I think these numbers got the reaction they did. But betting alongside of the Restoration Hardware consumer right now, I think you do. I think the economy's at least beating to the upside. I think anybody that's shopping at Restoration Hardware knows the stock market's at all-time highs. These are people that have houses that are worth more. They're still locked in at 2.5%. So there is that skew within the consumer that I think you can continue to play. And then back to Walmart and some names that we've talked about. There is crossover. And Walmart, to me, is growing their margin. That's a company that is doing everything right.
Right. And in terms of the housing down cycle, in terms of home furnishings, they actually said, Williams-Sonoma on the conference call, we're closer to the end of this down cycle. And West Elm, which is always a problem, showing some signs of that turnaround.
100%.
And
again,
that's lower end.
And that's, well,
compared to Restoration.
Correct. You know, Steve brought up Walmart correctly. But Walmart tells us, I think now north of 60% of their client base has income of $100,000 or more. So, again, that speaks to the middle. You know, the middle end of the country getting squeezed as well, where they're having to move down to, you know, the whole thing sort of, and I understand what Lori's saying. She might be spot on. Maybe this is a great data point if you want the Fed to lower rates. Of course, the problem is inflation dragon hasn't been tamed yet, I don't think. So if they were to do that, I think the commodities, which we'll talk about later, I think they're just going to continue on their horse hire.
All right. Meantime, shares of Robinhood getting a boost in the after-hour session after releasing some data on customers and assets. Kate Rooney joins us with all the details. Kate.
Hey, Melissa. Yeah, we're getting some updated numbers from Robinhood. The brokerage firm seeing a significant jump in assets and trading volume as market conditions improve. At the end of February, assets topped $118.7 billion. That was up 16% from January. Net deposits, meanwhile, were $3.6 billion in February. That translates to about a 42% annualized growth rate from January. They also say Trading volumes in February were higher across all asset classes relative to January. If you look at equity trading volumes, those are up 36%. That's up 41% from a year ago. Options trading volume grew about 12% and 33% from a year ago. And then crypto volumes as well grew up 10%. That was, you know, about an 80% jump from a year ago, at least, yes, from the prior year. Options volumes up 12%, margin balances up 6%. And that looks like all we got here. But Robinhood does rely heavily on trading volume. More activity absolutely tends to bode well for the bottom line, which you're seeing reflected in the stock here after hours, Melissa, up more than 8%. Back over to you.
All right. Kate, thanks. Kate Rooney. Coinbase not getting too much of a boost off the back of the Robinhood, maybe obviously because they have a more focused business than Robinhood, which is a little bit more diversified in terms of the options and equities.
I mean, these Robinhood news points shouldn't surprise anybody. But if you stripped out the price of Bitcoin, in other words, if you kept Bitcoin flat, I bet those numbers are flat. I'm just saying, I mean, who's their audience? Who are the people that are trading on Robinhood? Good for Guy, good for Dan. They've been talking about this recovery, and I think it certainly can continue. In terms of Coinbase, it's a combination of what do we see every single day in terms of the backlog that are going into the Bitcoin ETFs, the size of the institutional world that's going in. It only augurs well for the broadening of this digital market, of which Coinbase really has the pole position in terms of the on-ramp into the real digital.
When we it was a final trade of mine, Robinhood, around 12, I think it was Mizuho. I based it on a Mizuho analyst that was on the desk. We said, what was the best way to play Bitcoin? And he said Robinhood. So it's been a great trade from there. I'm long iBit. I'm long Ethereum Grayscale Trust. But if you look at Robinhood, I feel like they're changing the narration. They're bringing a lot of money into retirement accounts where it was seen as they were a different type of investment firm. Now they're
pandemic. They were. Yeah, for sure.
Exactly. And now they're sort of a mainstream. They're trying to shoot for that mainstream IRA money and investment money.
Yeah, that was Dan Dole of Mizuho. But yes, to be fair, he got it wrong on Coinbase, which he was very negative
very
on.
Wrong.
The run that
very
was
wrong.
On Coinbase.
Yeah, I think the stock was trading about 135 at the time, Coinbase. Yeah, I mean, you get some right, you get some wrong. And Steve talked about Robinhood for sure. Analysts are off sides on this one, I'm pretty convinced. So after an announcement like that, people are going to have to start to raise their price targets, which sometimes matters, sometimes doesn't. It's had a great run. I actually think it continues.
Coming up, a huge drop in U.S. steel as the company's planned acquisition by Nippon hits a snag. The headlines have sent shares to their worst day in nearly 4 years. Plus, we're live with the executive chairman of Lennar, the home builder dropping after earnings. We'll dive into the report, get a closer read on what is next for this company right after this.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Lennar. Shares heading lower in the after hours. A home construction company reporting a slight miss on revenue but beating on earnings. CNBC's Diana Olick joins us now for a CNBC exclusive interview with Executive Chairman and Co-CEO Stuart Bilder. Diana.
Thanks, Melissa. And Stuart, thanks so much for joining us. A lot in this report, so I want to get right to it. You had a strong quarter with a 28% increase in new orders and a 23% increase in deliveries year over year, but that came at a price. How much did higher mortgage rates hurt you in terms of having to rely on pricing and incentives?
Well, if you really look at our numbers, Diana, you see that our margins are actually up year over year. Margins kind of act in seasonal fashion. And so if you look at our fourth quarter last year versus first quarter this year, it has about the same relationship that the fourth quarter had to the first quarter the year before and years before that. So it really didn't come at a price. In actual fact, what we've seen is that incentives have started to moderate just a little bit. Now, that, of course, varies as interest rates trail up or down. But our program has been solid from sales to deliveries, and our margin is actually stronger than our guide last quarter to this quarter. We thought we'd come in somewhere around 21.2. We actually ended up coming in at 21.8. And that's a strong proxy for the fact that the new normal is kind of stabilizing a little bit. Demand trends remain strong, and interest rates definitely have an impact on affordability.
Now, I see the average price of a home, though, that sold in Q1 dropped from $421,000 down to $421,000 from $448,000 last year. Was that an actual price drop, or are you just selling smaller, less expensive homes with fewer amenities?
Yeah, it's a combination between the two. Some of it's going to be mixed, but some of it is certainly that prices have come down. They have moderated. I guess from an inflation standpoint, that's probably positive news. But overall, we see a fairly robust environment from the standpoint that demand is strong, and we all know that supply is short across the country.
But you said in the release, we remain focused on consistent production pace, driving sales pace. Now, other builders, though, are pulling back, and we're seeing single family housing starts in January actually came down month to month, which you wouldn't expect right before the spring. We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Why are you building so much when others are pulling back?
Look, we've had a contra view, and the contra view is there is a housing shortage in the country. The country needs more dwellings, especially for workforce housing. We think that it is important for the home builders to be building through and compromising a little bit on margin in favor of providing affordable, attainable housing across the country. And so that's the direction that we've taken, and we've leaned into our ability, our strong balance sheet, and our strong ability to provide housing when it's needed.
But you stay land light. Why?
Why do we stay land light? We stay land light because from a balance sheet standpoint, and if you look at our balance sheet, we're running at a debt to total capital ratio of below 10% right now. That is an effective way to generate returns and to generate shareholder returns while at the same time providing the housing that the country needs. And if you look at our cash flows, you look at the way that our company's configured right now, by design, if we continue to maintain pace and maintain production, we're able to reduce the cost of production and therefore actually produce more affordable, more attainable housing for the country. And that's good for the workforce.
Okay, and I think Melissa has a question for you.
Stuart, at what point do mortgage rates have to drop in order for you to stop incentives altogether?
Hard to tell. I think there are a lot of different factors that are going to feed into that. Interest rates will probably, in order to stop incentives altogether, there's always been a normalized level of incentivizing in the new home market. But I would say a couple hundred basis points is probably where we're going to have to drop to get to a new normal. And we'll start to see at that point the existing home market start to come back into play.
And Stuart, we've seen a lot of fluctuations recently in mortgage rates that have pushed buyers in, pulled them out. Do you see that 7% is now the new normal? Because there's a lot of talk maybe we're not going to see it come below 7% on the 30-year fixed. You can buy it down to 5. But what do you think is that buyer's level?
Well, the reason that we have been buying down to 5, although it's been less of a buy down than it had been when sticker shock prevailed, it seems that the buy down's a pretty good indicator as to where the consumer really starts to come in at normalized interest rates. And so that might be at 5, 5.5%. But it doesn't feel to us like we're going to see mortgage rates fall in the near future. And so we continue our production levels, even as interest rates remain high, using those buy downs to keep meeting the consumer at the intersection of their affordability and where we can produce homes at a solid margin.
Stuart, always great to talk to you. Stuart Miller, Executive Chairman of Lennar. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Diana, thank you. Diana Olick, and our thanks as well to Stuart. So what do we make of this trade here? A couple hundred basis points is a long way from where we are right now.
Well, it's been a phenomenal trade, and it's a trade I definitely have not been in. And I've been of the view that even despite the unbelievable demand factors, that I just felt rates were an impediment. In Lennar's case, they're clearly going pace over price. I mean, they've sacrificed margins. They've been trying to compete. They've been moving, I would say, lower in their ASPs, and that's been proven to work. Whether that really translates, though, into a higher multiple, what you're starting to see is some EPS cuts, even though these numbers were solid. 60% move since the October pivot. I think I'm out still.
It's interesting. We talked about the retailers before. So let's just quickly talk about home builders. Toll Brothers, which reported a couple weeks ago, their average selling price is now tad north of $1 million, going up.
Right.
Lennar, we just heard from, $420,000.
The tale of two consumers as well.
100%. And then Pulte Home, right? You like
look
the way
what
they
you're
did
doing. I'll
well,
show.
You know,
I think you're
going to
find this.
So
yeah.
It's almost poetic what you've done.
I could do it in haiku. Maybe later. And then Pulte Home somewhere in the middle. So the move, I will say with Tim as well, I think we had it right into the fall of last year. But the parabolic move since, I think it'll catch a lot of people off guard. If you think unemployment stays low, I think you have at it. If you think it starts to tick higher, I think you pull the ripcord.
What do you think, Lori?
So, look, I would say big picture-wise, it feels to me like we're entering into this idea the rates are going to be higher for longer, come down a little bit, not nearly as much as we thought. I feel like that has more impact on the home builder space generally. I also feel like the home builder space as a whole has defied expectations for the last, like, year and a half, and you've had a lot of head scratching. This is not a lagging area of the market to be looking for opportunities in at this point. So I think the bar is high, and when you don't beat on, you know, if you beat on earnings and miss on revenues, I don't think investors generally like that, and you know, it just seemed like a bad setup to begin with.
A name that did really well when there was nothing on the market was D.R. Horton because they were a spec builder. They've obviously trailed because they're left with too much inventory, I'm guessing, at this point. But when the market turns, they'll turn.
Are you, you've been in it.
I've been in Lennar. I'm not in Lennar right now. Pulte is your entryway into the home builders. But I think DHI is your contra bet that when the market does turn on interest rates, you'll see this one pop.
There's a lot more fast money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Has Tesla lost its magnificence? Analysts unplugging as shares hit 10-month lows. But is all the negative EV talk overdone? The electric debate next. Plus, the clock nearing midnight and TikTok's fate is hanging in the balance. The latest on the bill that could see time run out for the Chinese social media app in the U.S. You're watching Fast Money, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
From a flat tire in the city to a dead battery on a distant drive, AAA is partnering with T-Mobile for Business to accelerate response times and get more drivers back on the road fast. Our nationwide connectivity powers location telematics, so AAA's fleet can find stranded drivers quickly while being fully equipped with the in-vehicle tools to have answers when they get there. This is elevating the member experience. This is AAA with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Welcome back to Fast Money. U.S. Steel falling over 12% today in a report that President Biden will raise serious concerns over Nippon Steel's plans to buy the company. Those comments expected to come ahead of a state visit next month with Japan's prime minister. The White House declining to comment to CNBC on this report, but has said previously the takeover deal warrants, quote, serious scrutiny. U.S. Steel shares notching their worst day since June 2020. So if not Nippon, then who, Steve?
Nobody. It's not going to be anybody, or it'll be a U.S. conglomerate or something else on that front. But this would have been a political disaster for him. So he had to come out against it. The United Steelworkers were totally against this deal. This would have done a horrific job for employment. So this was a headwind that he had to change stance on.
I think it was a deal that he had to talk about, but I think it's crazy that he's talking about it. So I'll get to the other side of that. I just, you know, I mean, there's no overlap. There's no excess. There's no extreme concentration.
But
Nippon is not
a foreign country. It's another country.
It's not a Chinese steel company. I mean, Japan's our friends. Nippon, this is how they grow. They've been doing it around the world. There's no other buyer for U.S. Steel, by the way.
Right.
So I think this deal gets done.
Yeah.
Look, I would just say we talk to investors a lot about what the post-COVID era looks like. Deglobalization, even if you're our friend, we're not necessarily going to want to do business with you. I think this is a function or something we're going to see a lot more of going forward over the over coming years.
So what happens to U.S. Steel? Nobody wants to buy them.
Well, it's, I think
I mean, if Nippon has to walk away,
it sifts back down to probably, I don't know, mid-third. When was this? In July when this was announced? I forget. Time goes by very quickly. I don't know why he
waited.
It was
December.
Was it December?
Yeah, mid-December. Oh, yeah, that's right, because it had
why did I think it was early? Anyway, yeah. I mean, okay. They waited a long time, number one. Number two, to Tim's point, I mean, maybe U.S. Steel should run themselves a little bit better and you wouldn't have people coming in. It's like that thing we did that. Remember the parody of Wall Street when you said,
why do you want to wreck this company?
Because it's wreckable.
Yeah, you did
right.
Well,
that was a great line. It was very convincing.
And I really put it out.
That was Academy Award work.
It really I mean,
it was.
If there was an Academy Award for spoofs on movies done by, on national TV, cable, that would have won.
Yeah, that's on YouTube, folks.
Down.
You can check that out.
Down.
I mean, I think we're all
put it
in
the show notes.
An Oscar. Have they had the Oscars yet?
Run your company better, and then we're going to have this conversation. I mean, it's really that simple.
Right.
You can get exercised all you want. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation.
Nobody's brought up copper here.
Well, it's a good time to bring up copper because fundamentals for the copper miners are very different than for steel companies. And I don't think steel fundamentals are great. I do think that if you look at copper going over $4 a pound, that's a metal that I think is at some point in deficit. There's been a total lack of investment and refurbishment and CapEx and OpEx in copper mines around the world. If dollar goes lower, if rates go lower, if Fed goes lower, you're going to see a lot of this stuff go higher.
Carter Braxton Worth actually chimed in on the copper chart today saying, if you're not long, be long. Mm-hmm. If you are long,
get longer.
Get longer. Yeah.
This is something that's obviously supply demand, and copper is definitely in shorter supply, but they're also pulling from them for EVs, renewables, turbines. So this is in a sweet spot. But I think a lot of this, whether it's gold or whether it's copper, I think a lot of it has to do with the U.S. dollar. U.S. dollar weakens, we start to cut rates, and that's on the horizon. All of these things that are priced in dollars go higher.
There's also a report today that China's going to cut production at some of its smelters, so that obviously you take some metal off the market and cause prices to go up, Guy. But this was actually your final trade just last night.
Yeah, that was just
FCS.
Blind luck. But I'll say this as well.
Squirrel,
you know, I understand they get labeled as commodities, and I totally get it. I think copper is a true commodity, and there is a problem. I mean, you talk to some people 3-4 years from now, there's a real concern. Where are we going to get all the copper that we need? And it's all the things that he mentioned. We just mentioned home builders as well. So Freeport-McMoRan, which has been awful. It's this close. You get a close above 45, and then this is a stock, like the gold miners, that could start to really play catch-up.
You know, and I hate to jump in here, one last thing.
No, you know, you just did.
No, I don't hate it so much. But Chile, I always mispronounce
Chile.
It. Chile has 21% of the global copper reserves. I did not know that until tonight.
Did you just Google it on your
It's all in Latin America.
Earlier.
I mean, Chile and Peru, and Freeport's had a lot of big run-ins down there. That's part of the problem. Copper's in all the places where you've got volatile dynamics on the local front.
Yeah. Is it still Dr. Copper, Lori?
You know, I think people still think it is, and I think you can just put this on the list of a few different things that are getting people more excited about the macro and the U.S. economy and the global economy right now.
Coming up, our TikTok-obsessed teens about to have a lot more time on their hands. A bill that could ban the app in the U.S. making its way to the Senate. Does it have any chance of passing? Gene Munster of Deepwater Asset Management joins us next to lay down the odds and explain how parent company ByteDance could get in the way. More on that when Fast Money returns.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks mixed to close out the day. The Dow with a small gain, now on a three-day winning streak, and the S&P lower. The Nasdaq down 0.5%. All three averages on pace for a positive week. Bitcoin continuing its record run, now up over $73,000. Some stocks, meantime, hitting all-time highs. Marriott, O'Reilly, Chipotle, Ulta, and J.P. Morgan all trading at those levels. And by the way, it's Jamie Dimon's birthday today.
No.
Yes.
That's where Karen is.
Happy birthday.
I did text her this morning joking about that.
Happy birthday, Jamie.
Yeah.
He's watching.
Exactly. Of those stocks, which do you like?
I continue to like what's going on in the banking sector. And I think if you look at the relative underperformance now for a couple of years, I mean, you can make an argument that banks are still in a pretty good shot in a place where we have not seen. In fact, credit spreads are right now at all time tights, or at least as tight as they've been in a while. It's a backdrop that's pretty interesting for banks, especially the money center banks that we know are also doing better in this higher rate environment. There's a better spread on where they're issuing loans and where they're able even to do some commercial. That's been the part of their business that we want to see what's really happening there. But I'm long Citi. I'm long Bank of America. I have a little position in JPM, and I think they're going higher.
How are you feeling about banks?
So we're overweight, and you know sometimes we feel good about that, sometimes we don't. But we were at our financials conference last week for RBC, and the tone was very strong. I mean, it really sounds like we're sort of in not the sweet spot necessarily, but something pretty darn close. I think you've still got good valuations, and I think the rotation in the market out of the former Mag 7. I don't know if we can quite call them the Mag 7 anymore, but I think that's starting up. And if that rotation is really going to have some legs, the financials have to participate.
Right.
Well, you know where I'm going here. I mean, you mentioned it, so I'm going to mention CMG continues. I'm not even kidding around. I mean, look at the stock is unbelievable. I mean, it really just continues to do the grind. And people look at it. First of all, it is expensive on valuation. I think why people think it's more expensive because it's a $2,700 stock and they have sticker shock without question. But, you know, at some point they're going to split this thing. They continue to grow into the valuation. They continue to do everything right. Stay with CMG.
They're always out of ingredients, by the way, in my neighborhood.
Well, maybe
you don't want to mention that.
If the door is open, have the chicken, have the
what are you looking for that they're out of all the time?
Without Pico de Gallo, just close the doors, all right, folks? So I don't know what they're thinking. Frustrated.
I think guys, right. Chipotle eventually is going to split the stock. I think that's going to bring a lot of new investors in. There's also that international expansion. I think they're doing a great job at running efficiently. Switch back to financials. JP Morgan is the only bet to go. If you have a regional, you're just worried about the size of the bank, regulation coming down the pike. JP Morgan's outperformed. You ride it until Jamie Dimon is no longer there.
All right. Meantime, the House today passing a bill that could lead to a ban on TikTok in the U.S., sending the legislation now to the Senate. Passed by a resounding 352-65 vote, the bill would force Chinese parent ByteDance to divest the social media app. On Squawk Box on Monday, former President Trump expressed concerns about a potential ban. Take a listen.
A lot of people on TikTok that love it. There are a lot of young kids on TikTok who will go crazy without it. There are a lot of users, there's, a lot of good, and there's a lot of bad with TikTok. But the thing I don't like is that without TikTok, you can make Facebook bigger.
Our next guest says TikTok's loss could indeed lead to gains for Meta. Deepwater Asset Management Managing Partner, Fast Money friend Gene Munster joins us now. Is what Donald Trump is saying true?
Will it be a gain? It will be. And just to put some context on that, Melissa, is TikTok has about 170 million daily active users. Remember, there's about 340 or so million people in the U.S., 170 for TikTok, Instagram. Meta does not break out the numbers, but you can back into it. That's at 180 million. So consider them comparable. The kicker here is that TikTok has average time spent is about 70 minutes a day, and it's about 40 for Instagram. So when you put those two together, the simple equation is that the time spent daily in the U.S. on TikTok is about 65% greater than what is spent on Instagram. Of course, Reels plays into that. And so this is an opportunity. If this was going to get shut down and Meta was going to capture half of their business, that would increase Meta's overall business by 5%. That's for half of it. And they potentially could monetize that even greater. So this is a big opportunity for Meta, a measurable opportunity, I should say, much smaller than the AI opportunity, of course, but it is a measurable opportunity.
So, Gene, is it only measurable if ByteDance is not able to divest and actually sell TikTok? I mean, I'm wondering, because if there's a ban, then I see that it's a gain for Meta. But if they're just operating as a separate company from ByteDance, it still exists. It's still drawing the advertising dollars away from Meta. So how would Meta or Facebook gain specifically if TikTok is still operational?
That is the critical piece here, of course. And if you look at, there's basically three potential outcomes, of course. One is nothing happens. I put that ads at about 50%. Then the potential of a sale, that's probably 25%, and a ban is the remaining 25%. So, Melissa, you are correct that if you weight all of these outcomes, call it a 75% chance that it's effectively a non-event for Meta. So I think this is something that Meta investors, this is one of our core holdings in our Titan fund. We're watching this closely, but when you put the odds together, it's essentially optionality related to regulation. And I would just say this related to the optionality piece is that it is remarkable that number of those votes that was at 350 to 60, not quite the right numbers there, but it almost reads like a typo. It's in today's political environment. So this is something that is still worth the time for Meta investors to follow.
It's also worth noting that in terms of Republicans, they didn't really fall in line with Donald Trump, who's now the presumptive nominee. They voted 189 to 16 for this. So, the bipartisan support part of this whole thing is really underscored by even looking within the vote itself.
Yeah, if I may, Melissa, there may be a chance where nothing changes and this all remains the same. You can look at who the president is. But I want to be clear is that TikTok should be banned. This isn't my commentary related to where teens are spending their time. I think what they do, their ability to influence opinion is remarkable. And I think that this is what we're seeing in this probably a historic vote in this environment and is the bipartisanship. And so I hope something happens here. And if it does, it would be good for Meta.
Well, and certainly it is when you think of the ownership here and where this data is going back to. And I agree with that. But talk about a typo. Meta seems to stand out in any company north of $50 billion, let alone the ones north of $500 billion in terms of its price to earnings growth. I mean, what's your PEG ratio on this? This is an extraordinary value in the middle of a market that people are claiming actually has no value.
I totally agree. As I mentioned, this is one of our core holdings. And at the end of the day we're optimistic about what AI, how that's going to impact their business. I mean, it's a well-traveled line. Let's talk about AI. But in this case, they've had a resurgence in their business that has not been largely related to AI. They're spending a lot on that. Don't forget about Llama. Llama 3 comes out this summer. It is the largest open source foundation model. That is a big opportunity. Eventually, they're going to find ways to monetize that. Potentially, they could come out with like an AWS type of a service down the road. But Zuckerberg is going to build this to 1 billion-plus users. They're at about 100 million right now. And I think when you put all those together, Tim, it really sets up for, despite the incredible move that this has had, if you believe in AI, which Deepwater, we're firm believers, this is going to be a three-year bull market culminating in a bubble. Meta should continue to perform well.
Gene, great to have you. Thank you.
Thank
Munster,
you.
Deepwater Asset Management. Is there a trade around this guy? Or is it just even knowing that if there is a Trump presidency, that he has a target on Meta's back?
That was going to be my next question to Gene, because if he just said that they're I'm paraphrasing, I'm sure, enemy of the people. You have to say that if then he's elected president again, what happens to Facebook? So that's an existential risk. But I would push back and say, what's the retaliation, if any, from the Chinese government, right? We're start banning or having people make divestors. What do they do to sort of ratchet up the rhetoric? That would be my primary concern.
Both parties hate Meta. So both parties hate that organization. So I don't know if it could be that
much.
They
hate the Chinese more.
They hate the Chinese more, but it's still a bipartisan issue. When you look at Snapchat, I thought Snapchat, even though it ran up into the actual news, I thought it should have run a little bit further. So Snapchat's actions telling me that either Senate is not going to be able to pass it, or they're just going to pass it in namesake only. There's going to be really no bite to it at all. And this is just going to be a divestiture. And then we're all going to play by the same rules anyway.
It's a fun little taste of the politics to come, Lori.
I think so. I mean, one of the things I was going to mention on the AI politics angle, there was a little throwaway line in the State of the Union last week where Biden talked about the need to regulate AI going forward. And so I've just wondered, as we've started to see, this Mag7 bucket take some more hits, are the politics going to be just a catalyst, to cause some of this rotation?
Coming up, check out the energy stocks ripping to new all-time highs. Diamondback, Marathon, Phillips 66, just a few of the names at records. We'll dive into this high energy rally next. Plus, Tesla tumbling on a big downgrade. How far Wells Fargo sees the EV maker dropping from here when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Energy stocks rocketing higher today, many to record highs. Valero, Marathon Petroleum, Phillips 66, all trading at levels not seen since their debuts. And energy was the leading sector in the S&P today, the XLE up 1.6% for its sixth positive session in the last seven. You're talking about this on the call today.
Yeah, you're starting to see a breakout, and you're starting to see the energy companies that were punished for different reasons, some of them just because I think there needed to be new catalysts. And frankly, they were held hostage by the macro oil price, which has been basing has rallied 15%. But when you look back on the earnings that we had out of some of the biggest integrated, and I'll just single out Chevron. I'm long it. I would be getting clients into it now because I think the dynamic around their free cash flow generation, their debt pay down, this is a very different company again than it was 10 years ago, let alone five. I think you're continuing to see energy as a sector also see allocation. And right now, again, at one point we were close to 5% of the S&P. It's below that. I think it's going to start to build up that weighting.
Is it finally drawing investors back in?
I think so. I mean, we've seen works suggesting that it's been underowned. There hasn't been a lot of interest from generalists lately. It's still very cheap. I think there's interest generally in laggards. And if you compare energy to, say, something like industrials, where the valuations are sky high and the market's rotating, you need to move somewhere, I think this is one you've got to look at. I also think you got a good data point last week from Biden when he barely talked about energy and climate in the State of the Union. And there had been a lot of concern about political risk, and I think that moved to the sidelines.
Plus, this was one of the first declines that we've seen in U.S. stockpiles of crude in the last 7 weeks. And then you bring it back to what I said before about commodities. If you think the dollar is coming in, if you think rates are coming in, then the commodity should be priced because it's priced in dollars. That should go up. That's a net beneficiary to all these companies that we're discussing.
Coming up, Tesla shares slamming the brakes on a big downgrade from Wells Fargo, why the EV party might be over and how far Tesla could fall next. Welcome back. Embattled Tesla catching a major downgrade in our call of the day. Wells Fargo cutting the EV maker to its equivalent of sell from a hold and slashing its price target to 125 from 200. That's at least 25% more downside from here. Tesla shares already down 30% in 2024. Wells going on to say that the EV maker is no longer magnificent, calling it a growth stock with no growth, which is what many people here on this desk thought for months now. Where are you, Guy, on Tesla at this point?
I think it continues to go low. 150 is a recent low, recent within the last year or so. And everybody will point from that move from 113 to 300 and say, unbelievable move, you guys missed it. And yeah, to a large extent, yes. But think about Tesla over the last 4 years when it was north of $400. It's now more than about 60% off its all-time high in a broader market that's effectively at its all-time high. So Tesla's been a horrible stock now. Now it's beginning to accelerate to the downside. That recent low of 150, I think, is in the cards.
Yeah, this does feel like, and Guy looking at the charts, this does feel like it's getting a little bit overdone, where even though you get to that 150 mark, which I see the same level as well, I don't know how much past that. There's momentum both up and down, so maybe you capture another $10 or so to the downside. Mm-hmm. But I think we're getting a little long-winded in the bearish sentiment on Tesla. It's been in a declining trend line for quite some time. This is almost where it's the rabbit out of the hat, where Elon always...
What's going to get it out of that sentiment? I
mean, do we all think that crude's going higher or lower? Because that's going to be a tailwind.
Does that really make a difference at this point?
Of course it will be.
How about the Model 2 being a lower margin vehicle?
They also have 55% of the EV
space. Energy prices have nothing to do with Tesla's demand.
If energy continues to rally, of course it has something to do with it. People wind up buying EVs based on the price of oil.
I think they've
been cutting price so much, though, right?
Look, the margins are getting slashed. At one point, I actually thought that they were playing offense, and they still may be. But the reality is I just think about the momentum in the stock. The analyst community, when someone goes from 200 to 125, when this trend has been honest, I mean, there's the analyst community was slow on the way up. Mm-hmm. They're slow on the way down. And I think that's going to continue to hurt it. But it's just interesting because every other major, you know, call them the OEMs, call them the original internal combustion companies. Those charts are fantastic. I mean, Toyota is breaking out. GM is at a really interesting level at $40. I mean, this is the same level it's largely been at for the last 5 years, but it does look like it wants to break through, and it's up 50% really since that October pivot. So the fundamentals for those companies that have actually gotten more into hybrids, I'd go with that trade.
Up next, final trades. For the final trade, let's go around the horn. Lori Calvesina.
Financials, they've outperformed in 7 of the last 8 election years, presidential election years, if you look at the second half.
Great to have you, Lori, on the desk tonight. Tim Seymour.
Great to have you, and great to have Chevron in your portfolio. I think if you look at big integrated oils, this is the best run and the one that's paying you back.
Seeing Blysep.
And Blysep. That's right. See, yes, Blysep.
WestRock, it's up 13% year to date. It's going much, much higher. That's a technical term.
It's also the Seeing Guys clan.
Yeah, it is. Mo was saying that last night felt like a playoff game in Carolina, Tim.
With a lot of Ranger fans in that arena.
Like MSG.
That's kind of embarrassing if you're from Carolina, by the way.
Yeah. Transocean comes out rigged.
All right. Thanks for watching Fast Money. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.